coffee counter, her back against the security shutter, her knees tucked up to her chest. From here, she could watch the entire room. Ed and Ashley finishing their millionth game of Go Fish, Sandy reading her paperback, and Lars guarding the door in his usual spot. From the back seat of her Honda outside, under her sheets of rice paper for gravestone rubbings, she'd also grabbed a blue pen and one of her college-ruled notepads. It was in her lap now. Page one was doodles, abstract shapes, cross-hatched shadows. Page two, more doodles. Page three. Carefully shielded from view, Darby had sketched possibly her finest ever rendering of a human face. It was nearly flawless. She'd studied Lars, every slouching inch of him. His blonde whiskers, his slack overbite, his mushy chin and slanted forehead, the pronounced V-shape of his hairline. She'd even captured the dim gaze of his eyes. The police would find it useful. Maybe they'd even release it to the media to aid the coming manhunt. She also had the van's make, model, and license plate, plus a blurry photo of the missing San Diego girl. It would look great on CNN, blown up on 40-inch LCD screens across the country. But was it enough? Driving was impossible now, but tomorrow morning, when the snowplows arrived and opened up Backbone Pass to traffic, Lars would take Jay and leave. Even if Darby could manage a 911 call immediately afterward, the police would still be acting off a last known location. Maybe he'd get caught, but maybe he wouldn't. He'd have ample time to slip through the patchy net, to vanish back into the world. And that would be a death sentence for 7-year-old Jay Nissen. Jaybird Nissen, whatever her name was. According to the regional map on the wall, State Route 7 intersected two other highways near the pass, plus a major interstate running like a vein to the north. Whether Lars drove east or west, he'd have plenty of escape routes. On closer inspection, she also learned that the Wanapah, Little Devil, rest stop was 20 miles downhill. This one, the one they were all stranded at, was actually Wanapani. She'd misread the map earlier. They were 20 miles further from civilization. In Paiute, Wanapani translated to Big Devil. Of course it did. Darby still had the bullet in her pocket, too. She'd inspected it under green fluorescent lights in the women's restroom. The bullet's blunt nose was split with four cross cuts, which appeared deliberate for some unknown reason. The bottom of it, the brass rim, had stamped lettering. 45 Auto Federal. She'd heard of guns called 45s before, in cop movies, but it was chilling to think that there was a real one right here, in the room with her, tucked under Lars's jacket, just a few feet away. Darby had known this in her gut for an hour now, but her mind was finally coming around to it, too. A suspect description and a blurry, half-assed photo wouldn't be good enough. It would be enough for the media to brand her a hero if things worked out nicely, but it wasn't enough to guarantee Jay's rescue. And afterward, if the cops never found Lars, what would she tell the poor girl's parents? "Sorry, your kid is dead, but I called the police and wrote down the license plate and ran everything through the proper channels. I even drew a picture." No, she needed to take action. Here, tonight. In this snowbound little rest area, before the plows arrived at dawn, she needed to stop Lars herself. Somehow. This was as far as her plan went. She sipped her coffee. This was her third cup, bitter and jet black. She'd always loved her stimulants. Espresso shots, Red Bull, Full Throttle, Rockstar, no-dose pills. Her roommate's Adderall, anything for that addictive little buzz. Pure rocket fuel for her paintings and oil pastels. Depressants, alcohol, weed, they were the enemy. Darby preferred to live her life wide-eyed, tormented, running, because nothing can catch you if you never stop. And thank God for it, for caffeine's acidic little kick, because tonight, of all nights, she would need to stay pin sharp. Above the regional map, she noticed an old analog clock, Garfield-themed. In its center, Garfield courted the pink female character, Arlene, with a handful of crudely drawn flowers. The clock's hour hand indicated it was almost midnight, but she realized it was an hour ahead. Someone had missed winter daylight savings. It wasn't even 11 yet. Come to think of it, she wasn't sure which was more nerve-wracking, running out of time or having too much of it. As she completed her sketch, shadowing the lumpy slope of his forehead, which reminded her of a human fetus, she noticed Lars was finally warming up to the others. At least there was a little more of a group dynamic now. Ashley was showing Lars and Ed a card trick, something he called a Mexican turnover. From what Darby overheard, you flip over a card using another one in your hand, but really you're switching them, in plain view. Lars was fascinated by the maneuver, and Ashley seemed delighted to have an audience. "So that's why you keep winning," Ed said. "Don't worry," Ashley flashed a huckster's grin, hands up. "I beat you fair and square. But yes, if I may be permitted to toot my own horn, I did take silver in a stage magic competition once." Ed snorted. "Yeah? Yeah. That's a thing? Of course it's a thing. Second grade? Third, actually." Ashley shuffled cards. "Thank you very much. Did you wear a little tux? You have to. How's the current job market for silver medal magicians?" "Staggeringly poor." Ashley shelved the cards with a rattlesnake chatter. "So I went to school for accounting, and let me tell you, that's where the real magic is." Ed laughed. Lars had been listening to their conversation, his hairy lips pursed, and now he seized this pause to involve himself in it.
"So, then, were the magic tricks real?"
The blizzard intensified outside. The window creaked under the pressure of gusting wind. Ashley glanced to Ed for a smirking moment.
"Is magic real, really?"
And Darby watched him decide whether to play it straight or to indulge in a little sarcasm at the expense of the armed child abductor. "Don't do it, Ashley." He turned back to Lars.
"Yep. Really?"
Ashley's grin widened.
"Absolutely."
She felt a shivery pool of dread growing in her stomach, like witnessing the moments before a car accident. The scream of locked tires, the unyielding kinetic power of momentum. "Stop it, Ashley. You have no idea who you're talking to."
"So, it's real," Lars whispered.
"Stop, stop, stop."
"Oh, it's all real,"
Ashley said, milking it now. "I can bend time and space, pull surprises out of my sleeves, make people misremember. I can cheat death. I can dodge bullets. I'm a magic man, Lars. My brother and I can..."
"Do you know how to cut a girl in half?"
Lars asked abruptly. The room went quiet. The window creaked under another howl of wind. Darby glanced back down and pretended to doodle again with her blue pen. But she realized with a sour tremor. He was staring across the room at her. Lars, the chinless child abductor with a Deadpool beanie and a child's fascination with magic tricks, was looking directly at her. Ashley hesitated. His bullshit machine was out of gas.
Well, do you know how to cut a girl in half?
Lars asked again, eagerly. Same tone, same inflection. His eyes were still pinned on Darby as he spoke.
You know, you put her in a big wooden box, like a coffin, and then you cut it with a saw?
Ed stared at the floor. Sandy lowered her paper back. Again.
Can you cut a girl in half?
Darby's fingers tightened around her pen. Her knees hunched closer to her chest. Rodent Face was standing about 10 feet from her. She wondered, if he went for the .45 under his jacket, could she yank the Swiss Army knife from her pocket, retract the blade, and cross the room quickly enough to stab him in the throat with it? She rested her right hand on the countertop, near her hip. Lars asked again, louder.
Can you cut a girl in?
I can, Ashley answered.
But you only win gold if she survives.
Silence. It wasn't particularly funny, but Ed forced a chuckle. Sandy laughed, too. So did Ashley. Lars cocked his head, like he had to squeeze the joke through the clockwork of his brain, and finally gave in and laughed along with them. And the room thundered with belly laughs, ringing in the pressurized air, until Darby's migraine returned and she wanted to clamp her eyes shut.
See, I got silver, Ashley added. Not gold.
Under another crescendo of strained laughter, and still grinning widely, Lars whipped his coat aside and reached for something on his hip. Darby grabbed the knife in her pocket. But he was just adjusting his belt. Jesus, that was close. He'd moved quickly, though. If he were really going for his gun, she realized, he could have killed everyone in the room. Lars only appeared clumsy and sluggish until he surprises you and strikes.
Gold medal,
he chuckled, tucking his belt around his scrawny ass, pointing a thumb at Ashley.
I like his jokes. He's funny.
Oh, give me time, Ashley said. You'll find me quite grating. As the false laughter faded, Darby processed something else. A small detail, but something deeply unsettling about the way the abductor had laughed. He'd seemed too alert. Normal people blink and let their guards down, but not Lars. His face laughed, but his eyes watched. He scanned everyone's faces, pupils searching the room, coldly assessing while he showed his mouthful of pointy teeth. That's the grinning, stupid face of evil, Darby realized. That's the face of a man who stole a little girl from her home in California. The lights flickered, a seizure of icy darkness. Everyone glanced up at the fluorescent overheads, but as they came back on and the room filled again with light, Darby was still studying Lars's whiskery face. That's what I'm up against. There's a time, deep into the night, when the forces of evil are said to be at their strongest. The witching hour, Darby's mom used to call it, with a silly little voodoo twang to her voice. It's 3 a.m. Supposedly, this was the devil's mockery of the Holy Trinity. Growing up, Darby had respected this superstition, but never really believed it. How can one time of day be more evil than any other? But still, throughout her childhood, whenever she woke up from a nightmare, her breaths hitching and her skin glazed with sweat, she'd glance to her phone, and eerily, the time had always been close to 3 a.m. Every time she could remember. The time she dreamt that her throat closed up in 7th grade social studies class, and she vomited a 3-inch maggot, pale and bloated, writhing on her desk? 3:21 a.m. The time a man stalked her on her way to 7-Eleven, whistling at her, and then cornered her in the restroom, produced a tiny handgun, and shot her in the back of the head? 3:33 a.m. The time that tall ghost, a gray-haired woman with a floral skirt and double-jointed knees, both bending backward like a dog's hind legs, came lurching through Darby's bedroom window, half-floating and half-striding, weightless and ethereal, like a creature underwater? 3 a.m. exactly. Coincidence, right? Witching hours, her mother used to say, lighting one of her jasmine candles. When the demons are at their most powerful. Then she'd snap her Zippo lighter shut for emphasis. Click. Here and now, at the Wanapani rest area, it was only 11 p.m., but Darby still imagined a darkness gathering in the room with her, with all of them, something sentient pooling in the shadows, giddily awaiting violence. She hadn't yet decided how she'd attack Lars. She'd already memorized the floor plan of the visitor center. It was simple, but honeycombed with significant details. A rectangular main lobby with two gendered restrooms, crusty drinking fountains, and a locked supply closet labeled Employees Only. A stone and mortar coffee counter, encircling a closed coffee shop, sealed off with padlocked security shutters. One highly visible front door with a squeaky hinge, one broad window overlooking the parking lot, half-blocked by a shelf of windswept snow, and a small, triangular window in each restroom, nestled into the ceiling, 10 feet off the tile floor. Like a jailhouse window, minus the bars. She'd remembered this, because it seemed like a detail others would forget. Outside felt like another planet entirely. The moonlight snuffed by clouds. The temperature had dropped to -2, according to the mercury thermometer dangling outside. Heaped snow crowded up to the window, still accumulating. The wind came in shrill spurts, slashing flurries of dry snowflakes that tapped the glass like pebbles.
"I could sure go for some global warming right now," said Ed.
Sandy turned a page. "Global warming is a hoax."
"I'm just saying. Thank God we're indoors."
"That's true," Ashley murmured, tilting his head in Lars's direction.
"Until someone gets locked in a wooden box and sawed in half."
Rodent Face was back to hovering by the door, picking at the brochure rack. Darby couldn't tell if he'd heard Ashley's joke. She wished he would stop tempting fate. This situation couldn't possibly sustain itself for 8 more hours. Sooner or later, Ashley would wander onto a verbal landmine. Weapons, then. That was what tonight would come down to. And as far as Darby could tell, this public rest area was as harmless as a preschool. Outside the security shutters, the coffee bar had only plastic forks and spoons, paper plates and brown napkins. There was a janitorial closet, but it was locked. No tire irons or flare guns or steak knives. Her best offensive option, unfortunately, was the 2-inch serrated blade on her Swiss Army multi-tool. She patted her jeans pocket, reassured that it was still there. Could she stab Lars with it? More importantly, would it even stop him? She didn't know. It was barely a weapon, unlikely to pierce a rib cage. She'd need to catch Rodent Face off guard, and she'd need to plunge it directly into the soft flesh of its throat, or his eyes. No time for hesitation. It was possible, she knew, but not exactly plan A. The cracked mortar under the counter, she remembered. The loose stone. That could be useful. She stood and approached the coffee counter, pretending to fill another styrofoam cup. When no one was looking, she raised her right foot, rested it on the wobbly stone, and leaned forward. She applied a little pressure, then more, fusing with the coffee carafe's lever to conceal the noise, until the stone popped free and clacked to the tile floor. Lars, Ed, and Ashley didn't notice. Sandy glanced up briefly and then resumed reading. When the woman's eyes were back in her paperback, Darby scooped it up. It was a little smaller than a hockey puck, smooth and egg-shaped, just large enough to bash out a few bloody teeth, or to throw hard. She pocketed the cold rock and returned to her seat on the bench, taking mental inventory. A 2-inch knife, a medium-sized rock, and a single 45 caliber bullet. "I'm going to need help," she realized. She could try and take down Lars herself, of course, surprise him, injure him, twist the gun from his jacket and detain him with it until the snowplows arrived at dawn. Hogtie him with his own electrical tape, maybe. And if things went to hell, she supposed she'd be mentally prepared to kill him. But attempting it right now, solo, would be irresponsible. She needed to share her discovery with someone else here, in case Lars managed to overpower her and quietly hide her body without the others realizing. She couldn't save Jay if she got herself killed first. The difference between a hero and a victim? Timing. At the table, Ashley fanned out the cards in a smooth rainbow, all face down except a single upturned ace of hearts. "And here's your card." Lars gasped, like a caveman discovering fire. Ed shrugged. "Not bad." From the bench, Darby assessed her potential allies. Ed was pushing 60 and carried a belly. His cousin Sandy might as well be made of balsa wood and hairspray. Ashley, though, as gratingly chatty as he was, he was also broad, muscular, and quick on his feet. The way he moved to pick up dropped cards, the way he confidently shimmied around chairs, he had the swooping, ducking grace of a basketball player. Or a stage magician. A silver medal stage magician.
"Do another one," said Lars.
"That's the only authentic trick I remember," Ashley said. "Everything else was kiddie stuff. Fake sleeves, trapdoors and cups, that sort of thing."
"You missed your calling," Ed said.
"Yeah?" He smiled, and for a split second, Darby glimpsed pain in his eyes.
"Well, accounting is pretty badass, too."
Lars moped by the door, disappointed that the show was over. Darby decided that her next step had to be Ashley. He was strong enough to fight, at least. She'd catch him alone, in the restroom, maybe, and tell him about the girl. She'd make sure he understood the gravity of the situation, that right now a child's life was at stake outside. Then she'd have backup when she chose her moment to attack and detain Lars.
"Oh!"
Ashley clapped his hands together, startling everyone.
"I know how we can pass the time. We can play circle time."
Ed blinked.
"What?"
"Circle time."
"Circle time?"
"Yes."
"What the hell is circle time?"
"My aunt is a preschool teacher. She uses this to break the ice with small groups. Basically, you're all seated in a circle, kind of like we are right now, and you all agree on a topic, like my favorite pet or whatever. And then you take turns, clockwise, sharing your answer."
Ashley hesitated, glancing from face to face.
"And that's why it's called circle time."
Silence. Finally, Ed spoke.
"Shoot me in the face, please."
Everyone was distracted again, so Darby paced back to the espresso peak counter and grabbed a brown napkin. She slipped it inside her notebook, clicked her pen, and scrawled a message.
"Guys, we're all snowed in here together, and we've got another 7 hours to go."
Ashley tried valiantly.
"Come on, we're going to get cabin fever if we don't open up and talk a little more."
Ed grunted.
"We're talking right now."
"So circle time, then?"
"I'm not playing circle time."
"I'll go first."
So help me God, Ashley. If you make me play circle time, the snowplows will arrive tomorrow morning and find a rest stop full of bloody corpses.
Darby clicked her pen. Let's hope not.
I like circle time,
Lars chimed in.
Ed sighed. Yeah, of course he does.
All right, a good icebreaker question is phobias or biggest fears, Ashley said.
So I'll start off this round, and I'll tell you all my biggest fear. Sound good?
Nope, said Ed. Lars had set down his brochure. He was listening.
You're all going to think my phobia is weird, Ashley said. It's not a normal fear, you know, like needles or spiders.
Darby folded the napkin twice with her message inside it. She knew she was about to do something that couldn't be undone. This was tonight's point of no return. From now on, one wrong glance or misplaced word, and the Wanapani rest area could explode into violence.
So I grew up in the Blue Mountains, Ashley told the room. When I was a kid, I used to walk the railroads and explore these old, boarded-up coal mines. The hills are just Swiss cheese out there, and this particular mine wasn't on any map, but locally, it was called Chink's Drop.
Sandy frowned. Okay.
You know, Ashley said, as in the derogatory term for Chinese people.
Yeah, I figured.
I'm guessing a miner must have fallen and died, and...
I get it.
And he must have been Chinese.
I get it, Ashley.
Sorry.
He hesitated.
So, I'm 7, and dumb as hell... I crawled under the barricade and went alone, without telling anyone, and brought just a flashlight and some rope, like a pint-sized Indiana Jones. And I mean, it wasn't scary at first. I followed the narrowing tunnel deeper and deeper, past these ancient ore carts, over these mangled 18th-century train rails, through one blocked door after another. Sound carries funny down there, all warbly and ringing, and I'm sliding around this old wooden door, and I rested my hand on the carotid hinge for maybe a second, and something awful happens.
Darby noticed Lars's attention had drifted back down into his Colorado Air brochure, so she seized her moment. She slid off the bench, and her wet Converse hit the floor with squishy thuds. Ashley made an abrupt slice motion.
The door swings shut. The hinge snaps closed, like these two rusty metal jaws, obliterating my thumb, fracturing 3 metacarpals. Boom. It didn't hurt at all at first, just shock. And this door was 300 pounds of solid oak, completely unmovable. And there I was, alone in the pitch black, a half mile below the surface.
Darby walked toward him.
2 days without food or water. I slept a few times. Scary dreams. Fatigue, dehydration. I didn't have a knife, but I seriously considered losing my thumb. I remember staring at it with my dying flashlight, wondering how hard I'd have to twist my body weight against the hinge to, you know.
Ed leaned forward.
You've still got both thumbs.
Darby passed around Ashley's chair and discreetly dropped her folded napkin in his lap, like kids passing a note in high school. He noticed, but smoothly finished his story, giving Ed an ironic thumbs up.
Correctamundo. Turns out all I had to do was wait. Some teenagers from a different town happened to break into Chink's Drop, and they walked right into me. Saved by pure, dumb, lottery ticket luck.
And, Sandy looked at him, your phobia is, what, being trapped?
No, door hinges.
Door hinges?
I hate door hinges,
Ashley said, making an exaggerated shiver.
They freak me out, you know.
Huh. Darby stopped by the window, watching snowflakes pelt the glass, and waited for Ashley to read her note. In her periphery, She saw him lift the napkin and unfold it under the table's edge to furtively read it on his knee. Out of Ed and Sandy's view, in scratchy blue pen, Darby had written, "Meet me in the restroom. I have something you need to see." He paused. Then he produced a black pen from his own pocket, thought for a moment, and scribbled a response. Then he stood up and casually approached the window, too, fluidly slipping the napkin back into Darby's hand as he passed. He did this as naturally as a pickpocket. She unfolded it and read his handwriting. "I have a girlfriend." She sighed. "Jesus Christ." He looked at her. She mouthed, "Not what I meant." He mouthed, "What?" "Not what I meant." Now they were both standing conspicuously by the window, with their backs to the room. Lars was probably watching them, wondering what they were mouthing to each other. Ed and Sandy, too. Ashley touched her shoulder, mouthing again, "What?" Darby felt it, that familiar paralysis locking up her bones, like climbing on stage and forgetting your lines. If she spoke, they'd overhear. If she didn't, she risked making a scene. The entire world teetered on a knife edge. She chanced a look over her right shoulder, toward Rodent Face, and as she'd feared, he was watching them. She noticed something else, too, and her blood turned to ice water. Lars had placed something white on the brochure rack. A styrofoam cup. Her cup. The 8 ounces of misspelled cocoa that she'd stupidly filled up and carried outside an hour ago. She'd set it in the snow by the Astro's rear door, right before she broke in and spoke to Jay. Then she'd forgotten about the cup, leaving it out there in the dark for him to find, near her clustered footprints. He knows, she realized, and something even worse occurred to her, that now the quiet danger cut both ways. He's planning to attack me. The same way I'm planning to attack him.
"Trapped in a coal mine," Sandy echoed to Ed. "Scary stuff."
"Eh," Ed shrugged. "I would have just cut off my thumb."
"I don't think it's that easy."
"Just saying, when you're facing a lunch date with the Reaper, what's a few little bones and tendons?"
Lars kept quietly watching them. And what frightened Darby most was the deep, dumb calm in his eyes. A criminal with any sense of self-preservation would have his gun out by now. But Lars was chillingly uninterested, untroubled, his vapid little eyes regarding her like nothing more urgent or dangerous than a spill on the floor that needed to be mopped up in the next hour or so. That was all. Another black thought slipped into her mind, and somehow, she was certain it was prophecy, turning up like one of her mother's musty tarot cards. "That man is going to murder me tonight. This is how I die." She looked back to Ashley and whispered, "Follow me, right now." 11:09 p.m. In the men's restroom, she told Ashley everything. The van, the dog kennel, the little girl named Jay from San Diego, the electrical tape, the bloodied hand, the unknown menace of a yellow card. Even the farts. And no matter how quietly she whispered, her words seemed to echo inside the restroom, ringing off tile and porcelain. She was certain the others could hear. Ashley exhaled, visibly shaken. His eye sockets shadowed harshly under the fluorescent lights, like dark bruises. And for the first time all night, he looked as tired as Darby felt. And another first, he was speechless. She watched him, trying to get a read.
So?
He replied. "So we have to do something."
"Obviously, but what? We stop him." stop him?
That's vague. Ashley glanced back, watching the restroom door, edging closer to her.
Do you mean kill him?
She wasn't sure.
Jesus, you're talking about killing him.
If it comes to that.
Oh my God.
He rubbed his eyes.
Right now? With what?
Darby opened her 2-inch Swiss Army blade. Ashley choked on a laugh.
He's going to have a gun, you know.
I know. You're not thinking this through.
I said I know.
Darby held out the .45 caliber cartridge in a shaky palm. As in I literally know he has a gun. He studied the bullet.
So, what's your plan then?
We stop him.
That's not a plan.
That's why I told you. And guess what, Ashley? You're involved now. It's 11:10 p.m. on a Thursday night, and there's a child abductor in the next room. And a little girl is locked in his shitty van outside. And that's the hand we've been dealt. And I'm asking you now, will you help me? That seemed to get to him.
You're sure?
Positive.
That Lars kidnapped her?
Yeah, she reconsidered. If that's even his real name. Ashley ran a hand through his hair and took a step back, leaning against a stall door. Peyton Manning takes it in the ass, had been scratched on it. Ashley gulped hard breaths, staring down at his shoes, like he was trying not to faint. She touched his arm.
You okay?
Just asthma.
Don't you have an inhaler?
No.
He smiled sheepishly.
I don't have medical.
Darby realized she might have misjudged this tall, dark stranger. Maybe Ashley, ex-magician, chatterbox, Salt Lake Institute of Tech student, wasn't quite as capable as she'd thought. But then she remembered his impressive sleight of hand when he'd returned her note. She hadn't even felt it. The napkin had just materialized between her fingers, like, well, magic. That was something, right? He'd caught his breath now and looked up at her pointedly.
I need proof.
What?
Proof. Can you prove any of this?
Darby thumbed the photo gallery on her iPhone. Behind her, the restroom door banged open. It was Lars. Rodent face stomped in, wet boots squealing on tile. Just like that, the kidnapper was inside the room with them, breathing the same air. Darby's mind screamed. We're cornered in here. We're both exposed. There's no time to hide in a stall. And the slouching figure of Lars whirled to face them.
That stubbly, chinless face wheezing through a mouthful of baby teeth.
Then Ashley grabbed her face, his palms to her cheeks. Wait! And he mashed her mouth to his.
What?
Then Darby understood. And after another heart-fluttering second, she played along, pressing her body against his, clasping her fingers behind his neck. Ashley's hands groped her back, her hips. His warm breath was inside her mouth. For a few long seconds, Lars watched them. Then she heard his squeaky footsteps again, moving to the sinks. A faucet twisted, a rush of water. The soap dispenser pumped once, twice. He was washing his hands. Darby and Ashley kept going, eyes clamped shut. For Darby, it hadn't been this excruciatingly awkward since ninth-grade Tolo. Just pawing movement and misplaced squeezes and half-held breaths. He was either a god-awful kisser or he wasn't trying. His tongue was like a dead slug in her mouth. After a painful eternity,
don't stop, don't stop.
He's still watching us. She heard the sink twist off. Then a paper towel tore and crumpled. Another long silence, and then finally,
Lars left the restroom.
The door clicked shut. Darby and Ashley separated.
Your breath is rancid,
he said. Sorry, I drank 6 Red Bulls today.
No shit.
Here. She thrust her phone out to him. A murky photo of Jay caged behind those black kennel bars. Only the girl's bloody fingernails were in focus. You wanted proof? That's what's at stake. She's out there in his van, 50 feet from this building. Right here, right now. Ashley barely looked at the photo. He'd already gotten his proof. He nodded nervously, gulping in another breath. He didn't come in here to wash hands. He was checking on us. And you're involved now.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
He sighed.
Let's do it, I guess.
Darby nodded intently, but her mind darted back to her mom's pancreatic cancer. All of that, the miserable 24 hours leading up to this, felt like another life entirely. One she'd blissfully stepped away from. Remembering it now hit her like buckshot in the gut. She still hadn't gotten a cell signal. She still hadn't deciphered the meaning behind Devin's stupid, cryptic text, now several hours old. She's okay right now.
Darby?
Ashley was looking at her. Okay, yeah. She composed herself, wiping his saliva from her lip, blinking in the harsh light. We need to surprise this asshole, and since he suspects we know, he won't turn his back to us.
Even if he does, that butter knife of yours won't be enough.
So we'll hit him over the head.
With what?
What do you have? Ashley considered.
I have a jack in my car, I think.
Too obvious, she knew, not concealable. But she had a better idea. She reached into her jeans pocket and produced the decorative stone she'd plucked from the Wanapani coffee counter. This will work better.
A rock?
Take off your shoe. He hesitated, then leaned against the stall door and slipped off his left shoe. Now your sock, she said. Please.
Why mine?
Girl socks are too short. He handed her a white, ankle-length sock. Warm as a handshake, and slightly yellowed. He winced.
My washer's broken.
Darby pulled the sock taut, slipped the rock inside it, and sealed it up with a tight square knot. She swung it once, smacking it into her palm. The arc gave the small stone fierce leverage. Even a quick flick of the wrist could fracture an eye socket. Or at least that was the idea. Ashley looked at it. Then her.
What's that?
It's called a rock in a sock.
I see why, I guess.
She'd seen it on a TV survival show. Rock in a sock, she repeated.
The cat in a hat's weapon of choice.
She smiled, letting the scar over her eyebrow become briefly visible. Okay, she hefted the weapon. Here's my idea. Lars likes to stand by that front door and monitor the exit, right?
Right.
One of us, person A, will walk past him, through the front door, outside, toward his van. He's on to us now, so he'll follow person A outside. He'll have to. And to do this, he'll go through the door, turning his back to person B. She smacked the rock in a sock against her palm. It hurt. Person B, who is stronger than person A, will come up behind Lars and whack him in the back of the skull. One good swing is all it should take to knock him out cold. But if it doesn't, person A, who has the knife, will turn around and we'll both tag-team him.
You mean double-team?
Yeah, tag-team.
Those don't mean the same thing.
Okay, what I mean then? She was being intentionally vague about this part. In theory, one swing of the rock in a sock would do the job. If it came to a scuffle, it would still be 2 versus 1, and both two were now armed. Lars might be a violent sociopath, but how prepared could he be for a surprise attack from 2 directions? More importantly, how fast could he draw his .45 and fire it?
Ashley was starting to get it now. So person B is me, huh? It'll be 2 versus 1, using the doorway as a bottleneck. Am I person B?
Darby placed the rock in a sock in Ashley's hand and closed his fingers around it, one by one.
You're stronger than me, aren't you?
I was kind of hoping you were Ronda Rousey or something.
I'm not. Then I guess I'm stronger.
2 versus 1, she repeated, like a mantra.
What if we kill him?
We'll bash him to the floor and empty his pockets. Grab his gun, grab the keys on that lanyard. If he keeps fighting, so do we. I was inside the van with him. I know what we're up against, and I'll cut his throat myself if I have to.
She paused, surprised by what she'd said. Surprised she'd meant it, too.
You didn't answer my question, Ashley said, drawing closer. And just so you understand, Darbs, this is an assault charge if you're wrong.
She did, and she knew she wasn't. She'd spent 30 minutes lying prone in Lars's sweaty van under an Indian blanket, listening to that flat-eyed creature eat and fart and giggle, with a 7-year-old girl held captive inside a dog kennel. She knew that whatever happened, she'd be seeing that leering grin in her nightmares.
Warmed it up for you, Jaybird.
But as for Ashley, well, she understood why he had doubts. This had all crashed down on him like a rock slide, all in about 10 minutes. In her other pocket, she still had the .45 round, pressed tight against her thigh. That was her real fear, Lars's gun. He'd certainly use it if they didn't bring him down swiftly. Even if he only managed to squeeze off a blind shot or two, there were bystanders, Ed and Sandy, to consider. Darby had never actually been in a fight before, so she wasn't sure exactly what to expect. But she knew the movies were wrong. If you can, she added, try to keep one eye closed.
Why?
We're going to fight him outside, maybe in the dark. So try to keep one of your eyes closed now, while you're indoors, in the light. And then you'll have an eye with a little night vision. Make sense? He nodded, half-hearted. And you said you have asthma?
Mild shortness of breath. I've had it since I was a kid.
Well, when I was little, Darby said, I used to have panic attacks. Really bad ones that made me hyperventilate and faint. I'd be in the fetal position on the floor, choking on my own lungs, and my mom would always hold me and say, inhale, count to 5, exhale. And it always worked.
Inhale, count to 5, exhale?
Yep.
So in other words, breathe? That's brilliant.
Ashley, I'm trying to help.
Sorry. He eyed the door. I'm just having trouble with this.
You saw him too.
I saw a run-of-the-mill weirdo, he sighed. And now we're about to beat the shit out of him.
I'm sorry, she said, touching his wrist. I'm so sorry to drag you into this. But I was dragged into it too, and I can't save her alone.
I know. I'll help.
If we don't do something right now, Lars could snap and attack us first. Every second we wait here is a second we give him to decide how to deal with us. If it makes it easier for you, stop thinking about this hypothetical little girl's life who you've never actually met. Think about yours.
I said I'll do it, he said,
and the ice tray lights flickered behind him. Thank you.
Don't thank me yet.
I mean it, Ashley. Thank you.
I'll help, he said with a nervous grin. If you give me your phone number.
Darby grinned too, all teeth. If you help me bludgeon the shit out of a complete stranger with a rock, just for me, I might just marry you. Lars saw them leave the restroom. He was back at his sentry post, a few paces to the right, of the front door in the lobby's natural little blind spot. He was trying vainly to refold a map of Mount Hood, but he tilted his head to follow Darby and Ashley as they crossed the room. Darby kept her head down. Her gray Converse squeaked, her socks still squelching with melted snow. No eye contact. Exiting the restroom at the same time had been a huge mistake, Darby realized. Both Ed and Sandy had probably noticed, and they'd draw their own conclusions. Behind her, Ashley noisily bumped a chair. Smooth. Her own heart was booming so loud, she was shocked the others couldn't hear it. Her cheeks burned tomato red. She knew she was visibly rattled, but conveniently, it might just fit the bizarre scene. If she'd just met a stranger for a quickie in the filthiest restroom in all Colorado, she'd feel pretty damn anxious about this 10-pace walk of shame. She carried her Swiss Army knife concealed inside her wrist, the metal ice-cold against her skin. She had to be ready. If Ashley's first swing didn't take Rodan face down, she'd stab him in the throat. The face. Those dim little eyes. I'll cut his throat if I have to. She thought about Jay in the Chevrolet Astro outside, crouching inside a dog kennel, damp with her own urine, her hand bloodied and bandaged, with 5 gallons of gasoline and a jug of Clorox bleach sloshing nearby. She wondered what would happen to this poor little kid if they failed. She was still angry at herself for exiting the restroom at the same time as Ashley. That had been stupid. Ed definitely noticed. He glanced up at them, slurped his coffee, and nodded at the radio.
"You missed it,"
Ashley prickled.
"Missed what?" "The emergency loop updated again. It's bad. Eastbound is blocked by a jackknifed semi at the bottom of the slope. Multiple fatalities."
"How far from us?"
"Mile marker 99, so 7-8 miles.
"Too far to walk." Darby sighed, glancing back at the big Colorado map on the wall. That would place the wreck somewhere by Coal Creek, halfway between the blue dots signifying the Wanapah, Little Devil, and Wanapani, Big Devil, rest areas. It was a little surreal how perfectly trapped they were. A blizzard sweeping in from the west, and a crashed 18-wheeler 8 miles downhill to the east, cutting off the exit behind them. Like an ambush, every bit as staged as the one they were about to attempt. She wondered if Dawn was still the ETA for the road crew's arrival, or if their timeline had slid back into tomorrow afternoon. If so, it would be a hell of a long time to hold a criminal at gunpoint. Ashley reached through the security grate and adjusted the Sony's antenna. He squinted into the coffee stand, into the dark spaces under the counters.
"And do you think they have a real radio back there?"
"What?"
"A two-way radio, or a landline phone? They'd have to."
"Easy there, Ashley."
"Yeah," Ed grunted. "If they do, it's state property. Locked up."
Ashley pointed.
"Held by a dollar store padlock. One good whack with something heavy, and those shutters come right up."
"I'm not in a felony mood just yet."
"Maybe you'll reconsider," Ashley said. "In the next few minutes."
Darby knew he would. She stood by the window, trying to appear calm, and looked outside into the dark trees. The snowflakes kept coming, some rising, some falling, catching flecks of sodium lamplight like cinders from a campfire. A few paces behind her, she heard Ashley exhale through chattering teeth. He had the rock in a sock stuffed up his right sleeve, ready to drop into his palm and swing. They'd agreed on a covert signal. When Ashley was ready, he'd cough once. This would be Darby's cue to walk to the front door, pass Lars on her way outside, and set the ambush in motion, like triggering a bear trap.
Only problem? Ashley wasn't ready. He hovered there, teeth gritted, sucking in shallow gulps of air. She hoped his shortness of breath wouldn't be a liability. Typical for her luck. I enlist the aid of the youngest, tallest, strongest-looking guy in the immediate area, and he turns out to have asthma. Just great. And she couldn't even imagine what was going on in poor Ashley's mind. An hour ago, he'd been demonstrating a Mexican turnover to this guy. And now he'd been asked to slink up behind him and bash his skull in. It should be me, she realized. I'm a coward for being Person A. Maybe. But Ashley was, without a doubt, physically stronger than her. So her being the bait and Ashley being the trap made plenty of logical sense. It just didn't feel right.
Hey, Lars cleared his throat. Excuse me?
Darby turned to face him, centipedes coiling in her stomach, her Swiss Army knife tucked up her sleeve. So did Ashley.
Does...
The child abductor was still by the door, squinting into another tourism brochure.
Does anyone know what this word means?
Sandy lowered her paper back.
Pronounce it.
Resplendent.
Resplendent. It means beautiful.
Beautiful.
Lars nodded once, mechanically.
Okay. Thank you, Sandy.
His gaze returned to his brochure. But on the way down, it met Darby's from across the room. And for half a second, she was trapped in the beady stupidity of his eyes. He mouthed, "Beautiful." She looked away. It had been over 60 seconds now. Ashley was still standing beside her, his feet rooted to the floor. And now she was beginning to worry. She couldn't just tug him back into the restroom for another pep talk. The first one had already drawn too much of the room's attention. She was stuck waiting on his signal.
Come on, Ashley.
She wished he'd just inhale some dust and accidentally cough, so she'd have an excuse to approach the door and kick off the attack. Under her sleeve, she pricked her thumb on the Swiss Army blade. It was satisfyingly sharp.
Please, cough.
She watched him waver there, like a kid on a high dive. He'd been so cool, so smooth and confident before. And now he looked like he'd just witnessed a murder. Darby felt a nervous tightness climb her throat. She'd chosen the wrong ally. And now the situation was unraveling.
Cough or you're going to give us away.
Ed noticed.
Ashley? You're quiet all of a sudden.
I'm fine.
Hey, look, man, I'm sorry about circle time.
It's all right. I was just giving you shit.
I'm fine, really.
Ashley adjusted his sleeve as he spoke, keeping the rock in a sock from dropping into view. Ed smiled, tapping the table's edge with two fingers. A quiet little heartbeat. And for a moment, the room was silent. And Darby could feel that sound in her bones.
Your big fear is, you said it was door hinges, right?
Ashley nodded. Sandy set her paper back down.
Mine's snakes.
Snakes, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Ed sipped his coffee, still tapping.
Mine is, well, I didn't really know how to put it into words, but I think I can now.
Another growl of wind, and the lights flickered overhead. The room threatened to fall into darkness. Lars watched like a shadow. Ashley licked his lips.
Let's hear it then.
Okay. Ed took an uncomfortable breath. So, here's some hard-earned wisdom for you kids. You want to know the secret to ruining your life? It's never one big, black-and-white decision. It's dozens of little ones that you make every single day. It's excuses, mostly,
In my case, excuses are poison. When I was a veterinarian, I had all sorts of good ones.